I want to know if you are aware that there is a controversy as to whether the containment vessel cracked because of the earthquake or because of the tsunami.
I haven't heard about the cracks, but from the beginning, I have been very skeptical of the official theory that the tsunami caused the whole thing. I think there's evidence from very early times, like the problems in the turbine buildings, that the earthquake likely caused some damage that was compounded. The trigger for the failure of the electrical systems and the emergency generators was the flooding of the emergency generators. But I think it's very likely that some of the ground for the problems was laid by damage during the earthquake. I don't know that for a fact. There's some speculation in it. I think a lot still needs to be sorted out about the Fukushima accident. And I'd certainly, I haven't been following it in blow by blow in terms of the technical details for some time. So I'm not current with everything. But certainly I would broadly agree that it was a problem, combination problem, not a tsunami problem alone, most likely.
You mentioned that you have seen some maybe movement in the opinion about what we should be doing, some awareness, some shifts. And if you could perhaps specify what people might be allies in this, particularly legislators, or if you perceive any kind of larger shift within the population around this issue?
Well, I don't know that there's a larger shift in the population. Maybe after Sandy there might be, but overall the last few years have seen a kind of a regression in this country on public opinion on climate overall, with many exceptions. After Carbon Free Nuclear Free came out, many people said, Arjun, you should stop. I'm a serial book writer. So people said, don't write another book. Please make this happen. You should. So, nonprofits are allowed to lobby some. And so we registered for that. We filed our IRS papers. I tried to, make my 2 cents worth heard in Washington. But I have to say, we failed pretty miserably. Actually, Congressman Kucinich adopted carbon-free, nuclear-free as his slogan during the 2008 campaign. He didn't get a lot of votes, and we didn't either. But we were heard, and I really admire his courage for doing it. And very often, my philosophy of elections to some extent is that you should put the issues on the table, and I really admire the congressman for doing that. But we didn't succeed in Washington, and we stopped. I felt I don't have anything to offer Washington by going to the Hill because I have no votes, no membership, and I have no money. So that is the currency, so to speak. And we work at the state level. California is going to lead the way in this country. It is leading the way with its 33% renewable energy standard, efficiency standards, building standards. It's not that we didn't have initiatives at the federal level. I mean, the Waxman-Markey bill has excellent building standards in it. We just adopted that piece of the Waxman-Markey bill for federal. But we can't. So some things have happened at the federal level that are very good. Our EPA administrator, Lisa Jackson, is a very gutsy and courageous woman who cares a lot about the environment. She's done some very good things. But we're out of our depth in Washington. We've been working at the state level with many of you, and we've helped make the nuclear moratoria stick in several states here, Wisconsin, Minnesota. We've helped against construction work in progress in Iowa, and so on and so on. We also have helped stop nuclear licensing, at least temporarily, around the country through the Waste Confidence Rule. I'll talk about that tomorrow. But I would say work hard. Take that chart I showed you to heart, where it shows the states are in the leadership. Organize really strongly at the state level. There are states that have only 500,000. The same reason why they didn't go to South Dakota, because it doesn't have 1 million people, can be a strength. you can organize there pretty strongly, and I think we should do things like that. I don't have a complete political answer for you, but indications.
Rolling Stone magazine article about Obama right before the election said he wants to make his mark with a smart grid, like the Eisenhower highway system. So maybe we have a springboard there.
Yeah.
I'm a big student of carbon-free, nuclear-free. I'm from Georgia, where we're building Vogtle, and it's our best hope. The question is, and it may really not be up your alley, but it seems to me that the economy is totally a barrier to this, that our heavy infrastructure for extraction of fuel is a driver and is against free fuel from the sun and wind. And if you have thought of this or thought of any way to break through that.
Well, you know, the initial way to break through that was, you know, carbon taxes or cap and trade system or some way to channel the investment money into renewable energy and efficiency. Obviously, we don't have that at the federal level. I think the next best thing is to have, not the next best thing necessarily, but a very important thing is to have renewable portfolio standards. So if you fight for a renewable portfolio standard at your state that you fight to actually implement and not set aside, and that makes some sense. I know it's tough in Georgia, but it's tough in Utah. It's tough in some places, but there are states that do have that. And then what happens automatically because you have a renewable portfolio standard is that there will be, what is happening in California right now is that there is an enormous amount of investment in renewables, and that brings down the per unit cost of renewables, and the Germans have led the way into that. You'll hear about that tomorrow. It's a very, very spectacular story. So basically, what that does is you're compensating for the lack of a overall more coherent national policy by state policies and maybe local policies, you know, pressure on corporations, how you buy, et cetera, et cetera. And maybe you can gather enough force that, you know, lots of universities have commitments for renewable energy and efficiency. Many of them are fulfilling them, many of them are not, to actually get it done. What we need is the volume of effort. You know, this place should have a smart grid for the University of Chicago. I know the University of Illinois at Urbana, I think, has a smart grid. I don't know why. Well, it might clean up the efficiency first, you know, but the smart grid could be done in the middle of Chicago. It would be very helpful. So I think renewable portfolio, when you mandate that a certain amount of your electricity should come from renewable sources by a certain date.
Stephen Sondheim, hi, Arjun. I'm from the Sierra Club's Nuclear Free campaign. And I have the same question I always ask you, but it's a little different. I'm looking now at the notion of taking the money that's being spent on nuclear, both new and maintaining, fixing old, and putting it directly into renewables. And could you give us a sense of a cost comparison? I've heard that we could do all the renewable we want in 20 years with that same money.
Well, I gave you a cost comparison on one of my slides. Wind is already cheaper, even with storage. Solar on a large scale is getting there. Solar on an intermediate scale, I think, is less risky and comparable to the middle of the nuclear costs, unsubsidized. So I think we're already there. The problem is that the money that is going into nuclear is not in your pocket or my pocket. You know, it is mandated to go to the nuclear industry by construction work in progress in South Carolina and Florida, and in Georgia, and these companies are collecting public money by force of law. It's really much worse than a tax, even though they are supposedly anti-tax political environments, because it's very unaccountable. They don't have to finish. So the trouble is that it's not yours or mine to redirect that money. And so that's why we go ways like renewable portfolio standard and so on and so on.
Keep them coming. Quick.
Thank you so much for coming and presenting, and thanks for coming to Chicago. I've heard concerns and I've read concerns about electromagnetic frequency and radio frequency bombardment by smart meters and all the appliances that will be connected. And I'm wondering what truly is the health dangers and risks.
Well, you know, this is not my area of study, so I'll give you my best take on it. First of all, it's very different than the kind of radiation that we've been talking about because it's non-ionizing radiation. It doesn't split apart your DNA molecules, or something doesn't get into your body and replace a non-radioactive hydrogen with a radioactive tritium and so on. That's not the way it causes damage. There is possibly a risk from various parts of the electromagnetic spectrum. It would appear to be small if it is there. I think the spectrum of smart meters is similar, to the best of my knowledge, from cell phones. There's at least one study that indicates that holding the cell phone against your ear, it causes a small increase in brain tumor risk, but only on that side of the brain. So that can help us sort out, this mystery. So your smart meter is maybe 20 or 30 feet away, and by the time the radiation from, so all of them have to communicate with microwave towers. And so the signal strength, I haven't looked at the signal strength of smart meters, but probably very similar. So I think by my rough back of the envelope calculation, the radiation that reaches you inside your house, typically from your smart meter, is a very, very tiny fraction that reaches you from your cell phone in your pocket. And certainly a very small fraction of what reaches you when your cell phone is against your ear, because it goes down as one over the square of the distance. So if you're 1 inch away and the radiation is one, if you're a foot away, the radiation will be less than 1% of that, 1.07%, if my math, quick math is correct. And so if you're 20 feet away, it's a very, very tiny fraction. So I think there's, just like this pollution from solar panel manufacture, this pollution from wind turbine manufacture, there's no clean way other than learning to switch off, other than changing our habits, consuming less and living more frugally, to actually reduce the footprint, our footprint, without creating another footprint that we hope is smaller. That said, I think we're implementing, so whatever the risk of smart meters may be, and I'm not well studied in it, that's the caveat, I think it is small compared to cell phones. And both of them have some benefit for us. If you have non-microwave smart meters, they also will carry some risk because you have to find some other way of communicating that signal. You have a cable, you have fiber optic cable, you have some stuff that we need a communication system in our electricity system. We need our electricity system to become much more like the phone system that we have now rather than the Ma Bell landline system that we had. So the grid that we have now is sort of like the Ma Bell landline system, very centralized, very. It's reliable, but it works, but it's punch card IBM machines. We need something more like the smartphone system in which you have a communication system between the consumer and the producer, between the substation and the producer. So when something, a tree falls somewhere, that the utility automatically knows where it falls, and so on and so on. We need, that's what a smart system means, among other things.
My name is Bob Johnson. I'm a professor at Michigan Tech University, but not in engineering. I teach rhetoric, so I like to play with words. I'm interested in education, and you began some about, you know, how we're starting to do some power plants, you know, nuclear plants in South Texas and in Georgia. I've just published a book, which this is unabashedly self-promotional, called Romancing the Atom. And in the book, I have a chapter on the political nature of nuclear power now. And the thing that was amazing for me is the easiest chapter to write, because what I wanted to go after was a phrase, which was that we're CO2 free. that nuclear does not create CO2. And of course, that's a lie. I mean, it's a huge lie. And but when I went to look at the politicians and some of the powerful people in the country who are making the decisions and driving the decisions to fund and come up with the subsidies to create nuclear power plants, it was the easiest chapter of the book to write, because I went after quotes that they had, and they all said it doesn't emit CO2. And this is everybody from Barack Obama to Lamar Alexander to Stuart Brand to, you know, Bill McKibben. I mean, it's just amazing. So my question is, how do we educate these very smart people who have already gotten somewhere in their lives?
Well, we need to get the facts right ourselves. You know, as I told you during my talk, there's no zero CO2 source. But there are many sources that are much closer to zero than coal or oil. So the numbers are coal is 1,000 grams per kilowatt hour, 900, give or take. Natural gas combined cycle is 350. Better if you have a really new plant. Solar, depending on where you install the solar and how you've made your panel and how efficient your cells, solar cells are, maybe 30, 40, 50, 100, 150, could be up there, but always a lot less. And with the promise that if you get rid of if everything is run by solar panels, you have no CO2. Wind is also in the 30, 40 gram per kilowatt hour range. That's because we make the steel with coal. If you don't make the steel with coal, it'll be zero. Nuclear is the same. If you don't make the steel and cement with coal, it'll be zero. So nuclear is a low CO2 source, just like solar and wind. It can be a zero CO2 source. CO2 is not the only problem. That's why I showed you that slide. Making plutonium just to boil water does. So you're replacing a carbon problem with a proliferation problem, and you're spending a lot of dollars doing it when you can do the same thing much cheaper. So it's part of my kind of burden to give this message that saying what you said is a little bit more wrong than what Obama might have said. I think when they say zero, they mean close to zero. They may not mean it, but I'm willing to overlook that because it's more true than not. And even though, you know, I have been a vigorous advocate of getting rid of nuclear power since before we had too many reactors. I've been doing this for more than 40 years.
No. I've heard you speak before and about this, but I wanted to hear you speak toward this point now. Along with the last person who asked, you talked about getting rid of fire.
Okay.
You could, yeah.
This comes from a guy who was hired by Austin Energy to think. Just a wonderful job. And I had lunch with him once, and he said, you know, bolder than a renewable vision is to get rid of fire. So that means we not have biofuels, you know. So fire is supposed to have defined, you know, how we all became human beings and, you know, civilized ultimately and so on. But it's not a very good. So you have solar photovoltaics or solar thermal. You're getting energy, no fire. And because fire is responsible for a lot of doing it with fire is responsible for using a lot of water, a lot of thermal pollution, a lot of fires, of course, and fires that you don't want. And a lot of the air pollution, a lot of the water pollution. So it's air pollution especially. So if you have biofuels, if you have biodiesel in your car, you're still creating air pollution with that. You know, you're creating some particulates, you're creating some carbon monoxide, you're creating some unburned hydrocarbons in your house when you use natural gas for cooking or heating. So getting rid of fire, actually, I haven't written about this, but I think it's a brilliant concept for the energy system of the future, together with a distributed grid. So all of these pieces that I've talked about really fit into a larger, but it's a more visionary concept, and we're trying to aim for the next 25 years, and we can't get people to listen, so I don't by myself talk about it too much. Thank you, Linda, for pushing me and for that being the last question.